Ani Misha, the demigods, Varsha, districts of a kingdom, Bhuja, rulers, Akila, entire, Shiti of the land, Pate of the Lord, Iva, as if Vishva of the universe, Shrija, the creator, Vidadati, execute, Yatra, in which ye, te, ye, they, two indeed, Arikrita, assigned, Bhavata, of you, Chakita, afraid. So you want to chant it? Is it up there? No, it's coming.
Brahm Ak.
Maybe we can chant that one.
Twam? I can do that.
Twam akarana swaradakhilakaraka shakti dharas. Tava balim udvahanti samadantyaja yani misha. Varsha bhujo khila shiti pateriva Vishwa Srijo. Vidadhati yatra yetvadhi krita bhava taschakita.
Does that sound like a tune? Do you want me to do it again? Yeah? No?
Sounded better at home.
I'll do it one more time.
Twamakarana swaradakhila karaka shakti dharas. Tava balim udvahanti samadantyaja yani misha. Varsha bhujo khila shiti pateriva vishva srijo. Vidadhati yatra te adhikrita bhavata chakita.
Others, please.
Thank you.
Ladies. Thank you very much. Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Though you have no material senses, you are the self-effulgent sustainer of everyone's sensory powers. The demigods and material nature herself offer you tribute while also enjoying the tribute offered them by their worshippers, just as subordinate rulers of various districts in a kingdom offer tribute to their lord, the ultimate proprietor of the land, while also enjoying the tribute paid them by their own subjects. In this way, the universal creators faithfully execute their assigned services out of fear of you. Purport: all intelligent living beings should acknowledge the sovereignty of the Lord and willingly engage in devotional service to Him. Such is the consensus of the personified Vedas. But Lord Narayan, while hearing these prayers, may have reasonably asked, since I also have a bodily form with sense organs and limbs, am I not just another doer and enjoyer? Especially since, as the supersoul in everyone's heart, I supervise countless organs and limbs. How am I not implicated in the sum total of everyone's sense gratification? No, the assembled Shrutis here rejoin. You have no material senses, yet you are the absolute controller of all. As expressed in the Svetasthara Upanishad 3.18, Apani Pado Jivino Grihita Asyat Yachukshu Sasinoti Akarana Seveti Vidyam Nachadas Veta Tamahur Agyam Purusham Paranam. He has no feet or hands, yet he is the swiftest runner and can grasp anything. Though without eyes or ears, he sees and hears. Nobody knows him, yet he is the knower and the object of knowledge. Sages describe him as the supreme original personality of Godhead. The hands, feet, and eyes and ears of the Supreme Person are not like those of an ordinary conditioned soul, which are derived from false ego, a material substance. Rather, the Lord's transcendentally beautiful features are direct manifestations of his internal nature. Thus, unlike the soul and body of conditioned living beings, the Lord and his bodily form are identical in all respects. Moreover, his lotus hands, lotus feet, lotus eyes, and other limbs are not restricted in their functions. Sri Brahma, the Lord's first creature, glorifies him on this account. Angane yasya sakala vrittimanti pasyanti pramti kalayanti chiram jaganti ananda chinmaya sarujvala vigrahasya govindamari purusham tamaham vajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, whose transcendental form is full of bliss, truth, and substantiality, and thus emanates the most dazzling splendor. Each of the limbs of that transcendental figure possesses in itself the full-fledged functions of all the organs, and he eternally sees, maintains, and manifests the infinite universes, both spiritual and material. Brahma Samhita 5.32. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives an alternative explanation of the phrase Akila Shakti Dara. The power that the Supreme Lord maintains within himself is Akila, free from the limitations of all that is Kila, or inferior and insignificant. He energizes the living being's senses as described in the Kena Upanishad, Strotra Shya Strota Mano Manasu Yad Vacho Vacham. He is the ear's ear, the mind's mind, and the voice's capacity of speech. As the Svetasthara Upanishad 6.8 declares, Natasya Karyam Karanam Chavidyate Natat samacha pudikaras chistate, korascha shaktir vivedaya suyate, svabhavihi jnanam balakhyam cha. He has no material work to perform, nor any material senses with which to perform it. No one can be found who is equal to or greater than him. From the Vedas, we hear how the Supreme Lord possesses multifarious energies, the potencies of knowledge, strength, and action, each of which acts autonomously. Indra and the other demigods who rule over mortal beings are themselves servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as are their superiors, Brahma and his sons, the secondary creators. All of these great gods and sages worship the Supreme Lord by performing their respective services of managing the universe and providing religious guidance for mankind. The powerful controllers of the universe submit themselves in fearful reverence to the Supreme Controller, Lord Sri Vishnu. As the Taittiriya Upanishad 2.8.1 states, Vishyama Vata Pravate Vishva Iva Sriya Visamad Anginis Chedyascha Mrityu Davati Panchama. Out of fear of him, the wind blows. Out of fear of him, the sun moves, and Agni and Indra execute their duties. And death, the fifth of their number, races along out of fear of him. Srila Sridhar Swami prays, Anindriyo Piyo Devata Sarva Karaka Sakti Drit Sarvagya Sarvakartacha Sarvasevayam Namamitam. The Supreme Lord has no material senses, yet he controls every living entity's sensory functions. He is the knower of everything, the ultimate performer of all action, and everyone's proper object of devotional service. I offer my obeisances to him. Om Agyana Timurandasya Dhananjana Shalakaya Chakshunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this morning I wanted to speak on two subject matters coming from this verse and purport. The first being a discussion of the dependence of the living entity on the Supreme Lord. And the second being what the Supreme Lord himself does with his own senses. So, dependence of the Supreme Lord, the living entity on the Supreme Lord. Actually, this description of how the senses of the conditioned souls are dependent upon Krishna is a basic definition of God. When we talk about God, there's so many different things you can mean by that. And even in our own scriptures, there's different levels of understanding what it means when we say the Supreme Lord or God. But the most basic understanding is that we're dependent. We're not independent on, not independent of the Supreme Lord. We have a relationship with him, and that relationship goes all the way down to the functioning of our own senses. We don't function independently. If we take, for instance, our working senses, five working senses are what? Does anybody know the five? Hands, legs, eyes, mouth, ears, like that. Yeah, these five basic working senses, particularly if we think about the hands, we don't act independently. It describes here in the purport that the hands, feet, eyes, and ears of the Supreme Person are not like those of the ordinary conditioned soul, which are derived from false ego, immaterial substance. So in the conditioned state, we have these senses, but they are essentially what we sing in the Prasadam prayer, Sarira Avijajal Jyotindriya Tayakav Jivipalevi Sai Sagare Tadamajay Jivayati Lopamos Dormati Takajitakidin Samsare Krishna Bodhidharma Kari Vara Jivadura Sabasadam Dilabhaya Senamitika Vara Krishna Bhunidam Primita Kochitanimita. Our senses, O Lord, this material body is a lump of ignorance. So we are, and the senses, the next line, are networks on the path to death. They actually have a more rhythmic way of singing this prayer in the Bhaktivedanta Academy over here. It rhymes. It's not so harsh. A lump of ignorance and networks on the path to death. But that's actually the fact, as confirmed by this purport. It says that our senses, the senses of a conditioned soul, are derived from false ego or ignorance. And what are we ignorant of? That's the question. What are we ignorant of? We're ignorant of how our senses are dependent upon the Supreme Lord to operate. That's our basic ignorance. And that ignorance gets us into a lot of difficulty. Since we just passed Ram Nomi, there's a key incident that happens in the Ramayana, which shows that even if we're expert at the execution of the functions of our material senses, still, because ignorance is involved, terrible things can happen. The story is about Dasarath. Dasarath was a very expert warrior. He was so skilled in archery that just by sound he could hit a target. Not even he had to see the target, just by sound. His sense of hearing was so refined that he could use his hands with bows and arrows and strike a target at some considerable distance. One night he was out hunting, utilizing this skill, and he heard a sound. He heard a sound that he thought was a deer drinking water at the river. But he was mistaken, was he? What was that sound, actually? Does anybody know? Yeah. Shravan Kumar. He was fetching water for his parents, and he had the jug in the water, and it was glug, 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 taking the water. So Dasarath mistook that sound, and he killed Shravan Kumar. Now, Shravan Kumar was taking care of his very aged parents. He used to carry them in baskets over his shoulder and take care of all their needs. When they found out that Dasarath had killed their son, they cursed him. And what did that curse lead to? He'd also lose his son. So, because of ignorance, even though he was expert in utilizing his senses, the sense of hearing particularly, he made a mistake, a terrible mistake, and so much suffering had to come from it. That's what it means when we say that they were covered with ignorance in the material conditioned way of life. We're covered with ignorance. And unintended consequences of the use of our senses will happen. Actually, in what they do in governments these days, they do policy analysis of any course of action they take. And one of the most important functions of that is to consider unintended consequences. Because we're ignorant and we don't know what's going to be the consequences of how we, we don't have complete knowledge of the consequences of our action. This is material life in the material world, a fruit of activities that are covered by ignorance. So this purport distinguishes between how the Supreme Lord acts with his senses. He asked the question, why am I not? This is very interesting. They present here in the purport about Lord Narayan himself asking this question, why am I not bound by ignorance and unintended consequences if I have senses and organs, or if I supervise them? But the personified Vedas tell us, no, your senses are different. And the main difference is they're not covered. They don't find their origin in ignorance. They find their origin in complete knowledge. They're not material, in other words. So material senses mean that they're limited in potency. The senses have limits to them, that they're dependent, as we've explained, and that they're covered by ignorance. This idea of limited senses, we all have experience. We can only see so far. We can only hear from such a distance. Our hands, for instance, we may have different potency in our hands. Someone like Adi Dev may be an artist, and with his hands he can create something very wonderful, just like we have Garuda up here. But my senses, my hands can't do that. I don't have that talent. He has certain talents in his hands. I have other talents in my hands. And those things can be taken away from us. They're limited in their reach and in their ability, but in their duration also, they can be taken away from us. Someone may be a wonderful scientist doing all kinds of experiments and discovering all kinds of things. But then as time goes on, he becomes senile and can no longer move his hands or control his hands or create or do the type of things he did before. This is what we mean when we say material senses. The Supreme Lord doesn't have material senses. He's completely beyond those kind of limitations. And further, as we read in the verse here today, the verse from Brahma Samhita, not only does his senses are they not limited and do they not wear out after time, but each of the senses can actually do what all the other senses can do. He can hear with his hands. He can eat with his eyes. This is the complete freedom that the Supreme Lord has. And when we talk about spiritual senses, we should understand that. Because the Lord enacts pastimes with his senses, and we can take them as quite ordinary, but they're extraordinary because of the nature of his being, the nature of his internal potency. So our relationship with Krishna in this dependent way is explained in various descriptions of the universal form. In the third canto, there are some verses, I just want to read a couple of them here, which describe this dependent nature that we have so that we know what it means when we talk about God. This is Creation of the Universal Form from chapter 6 of the third canto. O chief of the Kuru dynasty, the Vedic wisdom became manifest from the mouth of the Virat, the gigantic form. Those who are inclined to this Vedic knowledge are called Brahmanas, and they are natural teachers and spiritual masters of all the orders of society. So those inclined to be teachers, spiritual masters, they derive their ability to function in that way from the mouth of the universal form. Those that have the tendency to protect others in society derive their occupation of their senses from the arms of the Virat Rupa. Those that are laborers of work, they derive their ability to perform work from the legs of the universal form. The production of grains and their distribution to the praja are generated from the thighs of the Lord's gigantic form. So all of the activities we find described in the activities of conditioned souls are directly related to and coming from, manifest from the body of the Supreme Lord. That's the nature of our dependence on God. That's the basic definition of our relationship with God. Now, of course, as I mentioned, there are higher realizations of God and our relationship with God, but they're all based on this principle of a dependence on the Supreme Lord and derived from His sense enjoyment. In Goloka Vrindavan, the devotees there get the opportunity to directly serve Krishna, serve His senses in different ways, please Him in different ways. So the same principle there is, the basis of the relationship is satisfying the Supreme Lord, and the ability to do that being derived from the Lord Himself. So that's a little bit about our relationship with the Lord. Now, what does God do with His senses? Just like the question is asked in the verse, we can also ask our own question. If you've got nothing to do, my dear Lord, then why is it that you carry things in your hands? Somebody has nothing to do, they generally just stick their hands in their pocket, walk around, their hands in their pocket, nothing to do. But we see the Supreme Lord doesn't do that. Indeed, Prabhupada tells the story of his godbrother from Germany who went to India, and he saw all the deities in the temples, and he concluded that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Why? Yeah, he's playing. And what is he playing? What's in his hands? He's just playing his flute. He's got no work to do. Other deities he saw, and I imagine he must have seen the Vishnu temples. Because in the Vishnu temples, how do we see the Supreme Lord occupied in Vishnu temples? Yeah, he's got four hands, and in each hand he's holding something. So if he's got nothing to do, why does he hold these things? Can anybody answer that question? If the Lord has nothing to do, why does he have the four symbols of Vishnu in his hands? Okay, because he has to protect the devotees and kill the demons and maintain the entire creation. But if he's the Supreme Lord, doesn't he have somebody to do that for him? Janmasthami? His energies do it. Maharaj?
I mentioned many times that in this time, the two missions, the mission of the Yuga Avatar, and also the advent of Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna, coalesce in the same, apparently the same personality, ultimately the same personality. So Krishna is Paritanaya Sadhanam, that's the Vishnu function. And then also as Swayam Bhagavan, he is just the supreme enjoyer, as Bhishma Dev has pointed out, Adyo Narayana Puman.
So Vishnu has something to do, that's why he has some work to do. Natasya Karyam, I thought we read that verse. Natasya Karanam Karanam Chavijite. I misread here. It's happened to me a lot lately. He has no material work to perform. So he has work to perform, but no material work to perform.
Krishna book, it describes how Krishna wakes up and he meditates on himself, and even though the queens don't want him to do that, he does get up early and he performs his sacrifices. And it described that if he didn't do that, then no one else would work, so he does it as an example.
Mm-hmm. So he works as an example for others when it comes to this world that they have to work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the loving, he's responding in loving relationship, therefore he uses these four symbols.
He picked her up with two hands, then he saw the dirty hair or something like that, so he wanted to brush off the hair, so he expended another hand, two hands. That's how Prabhupada explained that how the Lord had so many hands, so many equipments or things to hold for
his, for reciprocating with his devotees. Tamarasana? Oh, you were giving the mic to somebody, Pushkar. You were giving the mic to somebody. You were... Oh, I see. Okay. You have to enliven us with your humor. That's your duty.
Is it not that when we say Parasa Shaktir Bibidarva Shuyate Sabhaviki Jnana Balakriya, is it not that the only form of God that has nothing to do is Krishna, Shyam Sundar, and for the manifestation of the material world and all other functions, he manifests, you know, different phases of incarnations and expansions like Vishnu. And they have something to do. Is that not the situation?
That's I think that's accurate. Yeah. That Krishna has nothing to do before he plays. That's what his German godbrother saw. Prabhupada's German godbrother saw Sadananda, I think his name was, in the temple of Krishna. He saw playing the flute, and he said, "This is God." So this is a very important point that you make. That Vishnu does, and he has these four symbols, and he uses them in different ways to reciprocate with the devotees, to protect them. Obviously, the chakra and the gada, the mace and the discus. But what are some instances where he used his other instruments to benedict the devotees? Maharaj, yeah.
There are many instances. I just humbly request your permission to allow me to repeat. I think it just kind of like went right by everybody. That these are the symbols of Vishnu. So in this particular time, the time for the Yuga Avatar and the time for Krishna Bhagavan, once in the day of Lord Brahma, they both coincided. This is there in Chaitanya Charitamrita. The Prabhupada explains very clearly. So to speak, it's as if it's kind of ambidextrous in this case. In other words, you have Krishna, he could in one moment act like Vishnu, and another moment he'll act like Svayam Bhagavan. Because the time for the Yuga Avatar, which happens every Yuga, which is in one sense common, I mean not common, but common, that happened to coincide with the time where once in the day of Lord Brahma that Krishna Bhagavan, the supreme enjoyer, who really has nothing to do but just to exchange loving relationships and enjoy, that the two are apparently the same form. But that's why Krishna sometimes will act as Vishnu, because they're both together, but he can act in both capacities. And that's a very special feature of what's going on at this time. Then, of course, Lord Chaitanya also figures into that. So, I'm sorry, I just felt the need to repeat that.
I think the
discussion was kind of like missing that point. I think it's an important point to keep in mind.
Okay. Well, let me ask another question. Does anybody know any particular instance where Krishna used his lotus flower? We know, for instance, he used his conch shell when Dhruva Maharaj saw him and he couldn't speak, and he touched him with his conch shell, then he was able to offer glorification. But using his lotus flower to benedict someone in that same kind of manner. Does anybody recall any instance when that happened? I don't, and therefore I'm asking. It's not like I'm holding something. I mean, obviously there's instances where he uses his chakra, and he benedicted Shishupal, right? And he sent Shishupal back, to gave him a spiritual perfection with his disc, with his club. His club, he killed Hiranyaksha, isn't it? So, any lotus flower, anybody here? Actually, the three weapons, Sudarshan chakra, Komadaki, the club, and there's the lotus and conchel, Panchajanya. There are stories in the Vedic literatures about how the Panchajanya conchel came to Krishna in this form when he went to rescue the sons of his teacher. The son had been stolen by the demon Panchaja, and Krishna killed that demon and he took the conch shell. Panchajanya became his conch. There are stories about how Krishna achieved the Komadaki, his club. I think it came when he was the burning of the Kandiva forest. He was given that as a gift by Indra. And the Sudarshan chakra, same kind of thing. But the Padma, the lotus, I couldn't find anything about where the lotus is either specially named or how it came to him in his incarnation. Does anybody know anything? The lotus? He just picked it from the pond? Chivakam, you don't hear the man on these things? These stories, you don't know? Yeah, Gajendra was offering him a lotus flower, yes.
Thinking if somehow it's related back to the Lord and Gajendra. I'm not certain, but you know, the lotus is mentioned here. And also with Lakshmi, you know, Lakshmi and the lotus flower, but I don't know if they have some relation.
Well, Mari Maharaj has the answer.
But you also kind of snuck in a related question of which devotees does the Lord interact? Didn't you ask that also? Incidents?
Yes.
That was a little earlier part of the question. So could we say that Queen Kunti was such a devotee? The vision of the lotuses, Namak Pankajan Navaya, Nava Pankajan Mahaline, Namak Pankajan Nitraya, Namaste Pankajangraya. And she saw Krishna, he has the mark of the lotus in his navel. His glance is garlands of lotus, his glance is cool as the lotus, and his feet are engraved with lotus flowers. So there were some figures in with Queen Kunti, she had that vision.
Mm. I guess the basic point that I'm trying to make here is just that the Lord uses his senses to interact with his devotees, to lovingly exchange with his devotees. That's how he utilizes his senses. So, William, there's any questions or comments or additions anyone wants to make? Yes, Janmashtami.
It's interesting, you know, that the powerful controllers of the universe submit themselves in fearful reverence, and then out of fear of him the wind blows. It's, you know, I should think that there, you know, fear of Krishna isn't really a big element in bhakti. I mean, it's from my understanding, you know, it's more of a love and freedom from fear, you know, like an entrance, like Urmila was entering, and she was in her Manashiksha seminar, she was describing, how the devotee sees Krishna as friend. And of course, this is the different levels of advancement, but Still in awe, it seems to me, I'm sometimes bewildered by that fearfulness that demigods have. You know, particularly Lord Brahma, you know, I mean,
Well, there's a distinction between someone being a demigod and someone being a bhakta, a devotee.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the demigods may be bhaktas, but there's still this distinction. I mean, in performing their duty, they accept authority.
Right.
And even as devotees, we also accept authority. And why do we follow that authority? Out of love, out of fear, maybe, you know, as we're developing from our conditioned state to the state of pure devotion, there may be a mixture of fear that motivates us to do service to Krishna. It may not just be pure love right off the beginning. Sakama devotees, we have some desires. So pure devotees obviously are motivated only by love. And they're not afraid. The gopis weren't afraid to give the dust of their feet to cure Krishna's headache. Whereas others were afraid in that sense of not offending the Lord. So I think ultimately there's a state of purity where there's no fear. But I think we can understand these descriptions from the universal controllers.
Well, I just want to add another aspect to it, is that the gopis' fear were actually that Krishna would prick his feet with pebbles, because his feet were so soft that they were afraid to hold his feet on their breasts.
Mm.
Or they did it very gently, and they thought that their breasts were too hard for his feet. So the fear that they had, that these devotees, most elevated devotees, gopis and Srimati Radharani, is for Krishna.
Mm.
And then, you know, Srila Prabhupada always says, Mother Yasoda Nanda Maharaj, you know, Mother Yasoda, if I don't feed Krishna, if I don't feed Krishna with my breast milk, then Krishna will die. Or she felt that, he was such a naughty boy. If I don't chastise him, he'll grow up to be a complete, like a juvenile delinquent. He'll be a crooked type of person. So their fear is on behalf of Krishna, whereas materialistic devotees, which may, you know, include the demigods, have a fear, a different type of fear. The fear is more oriented towards, you know, themselves.
Mm-hmm.
What to speak of us? I mean, we're full of fear, but it's on our account of our perishable material body.
Yeah, that's a good analysis. Thank you. Any final words, Kali Vani?
I was in Gainesville yesterday watching the construction by Krishna House. Huge operation with cranes and everything. And I was thinking that as soon as you step into that arena, you're completely governed by so many rules and regulations. You know, if you make a... They were lifting this enormous thing onto the roof of the multi-story thing, and, you know, there's so many rules and things you have to understand in order to not get killed there. So I was thinking that the fear of the demigods is more like just willing subservience to the governing principles of the universe. You're just moved by that. You can't budge an inch. It's that kind of fear.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think that makes sense also. That's a good analogy, because they're constructing the universe there to block the sun from Krishna House forever.
We also hear that Prithu Maharaj, he certainly was devoting an incarnation as well. And he said, I'm not afraid of anything. I'm not afraid of, he gave a whole list of all kinds of normally frightening things in this world. He said, I'm not afraid of any enemies or anything, but there's one thing that I fear, to offend the brahmanas, offend the devotees. So we also apply this principle that we, even if we become very, you know, like brave and strong and confident in devotional service, but we have to have not only a healthy fear of Maya, but particularly that fear of committing offense.
Yes.
It's a healthy fear for us.
Very good. So we'll end on that note of fear for Maharaj.